gentlemen, good evening and welcome to another edition of PZ85 Plays. I am your Game Master, Double H, and a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, our heroes headed below the surface of the Prak City, of the planet Praketh, to further their goal to investigate the Citadel Inquisitorius. It's been some time. Let me reintroduce the cast, as always, beginning with our co-owner and creator of Podzilla 1985, Shannon Young, playing Harani Tar.
This episode,
very tired.
This episode is called Pounded in the... Never mind. It's me.
Nope, it is not. Lindsay Wolfgong is playing Iris Nay.
I am out of candy, and it makes me sad.
Yeah, that's not good either. Tanner has got to have something better. The man himself, the big T, Tanner Calvert, playing Sigurd Talon.
I got my strawberry lemonade. I'm ready to go.
That works for me. And finally, as always, Cody Sandusky playing Cruz Cog Zubane.
Let us get on with the Star Wars.
Tanner's got he's got his Magnum condoms, he's got his Wad of Hundreds, and he's ready to plow.
Why? Why must it be this way?
He wishes to tank it all. He wants to take
the
it all.
The last time that we played, so first of all, it's been, I think, over a week at this point since we...
We're
since
in
we
a
met
hole somewhere.
This. Yeah, it's been a while. So, brief recap of episode 9 up to this point. Chasing leads to find the captured Jedi Master Denia. The crew of the Midnight Coterie made their way to the planet of Praketh, and more specifically Prak City, where they found a very strict dichotomy of locals and Imperials. Much like the scene on Nizon back in the day, the Nazarene. This time around, though, it's even significantly worse. Slum cities, where, of course, they were ultimately taken in by a guy who they rescued by the name of Jek Sejo. He's off to take care of their ship before they depart, because it needs a once-over. But in the process, they ran across one of the very much natives, a Starib by the name of Herd Tui, kind of a big hairless Wookiee type, who told them that the planet is sick and that he was doing everything he can to alleviate that, but he got caught on the surface. After a brief run-in with the Inquisitorius and a series of stormtroopers, our crew was chased down one of the drains, a bored hole dug straight down to the core of the planet, of course, but underneath the surface where the Empire has been dumping their trash ever since they started mining this planet for its rich minerals. And that's where we left off, as I recall. You guys had just exited that drain at the bottom, come to a crashing halt there. Any questions before we pick up from that point?
All good. Green light.
All right, let's go then. So, as we described it the last time we ended, everyone came to a pretty sudden stop, some more graceful than others, but for the most part everyone is basically unharmed. Shortly after the landing, it becomes very clear that Herd Tui is capable of seeing to some degree in the darkness. You all, however, are mostly not. It is extremely dark down here. Other than some bioluminescent moss here and there, and it all seems to be scattered about, so it's almost like pinpoints of light. Almost like a starry night that just exists around you, but not enough to give you any immediate light source.
Lightsabers.
Ignite lightsaber, yeah.
Same.
Okay. That'll give you enough immediate light to see around you in the area. It is very much an underground trash dump, as you expected. One of several that has been bored into the planet's surface around the city for the Empire to just basically dump their waste into.
Grisgog's going to look at Iris, and just say, can I have a glow rod?
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. This is, again... He's going to roll his eyes at the wanton use of lightsabers by his compatriots, seeing as, you know, we're supposed to be avoiding detection, but...
I'll let them handle the light so I can have hands free for a blaster if need be.
I would like to use an ability, if possible, while we're here.
Okay. What do you want to do?
That improves sense surrounding.
Okay. Let me go check that out real quick.
103 is what it... page I'm showing.
Yeah, that's the improved one, but since surrounding is still just a part of the use of force. So basically, This is, it allows you to ignore the effects of cover and concealment while making perception checks. Okay. Is that what you're wanting to do?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, do it.
Oh, shoot. Plus 16, so 21.
Okay. Yeah, you you ignore the effects of cover and concealment if you're making perception checks.
Okay.
To discover the things. It has no immediate effect.
Okay.
Short of you're just heightening your senses, pretty much. Basically becoming aware of things that might be hiding around you. Yeah. So that's what you got.
Okay. Yeah, so as soon as I'm able, I'd like to be able to check surroundings just to... get a feel of the area we're in.
Yeah, if you want to make a perception check, make one.
Did I lose you guys?
No.
No, you're in.
Oh, okay. No, I'm just waiting.
Is it very 31. Quiet?
31.
Yeah, There's an awful lot of like minor activity around, but nothing that reads to you in terms of using the force as hostile. Anything that garners this much trash is going to have a lot of life in and around it. And again, there's some bioluminescent moss. You suspect this is a lot of plant-like life in the immediate area, and nothing that seems to be undertaking a lot of movement or anything. So... to the best of your knowledge, there is nothing that is actively trying to avoid your detection.
Cool. That's all I want to make sure. I wasn't worried about any kind of humanoid figure. I was worried about any other kind of creatures that might be, willing to attack us.
Yep.
I think we're pretty safe down here currently.
Shortly after landing, in the process of all that, Hertui, as soon as you say that in his broken basic way, you can see he is trying to locate his direction, and once he finally settles on one, he says over his shoulder basically and motioning, says, "This way, come, no Grithka." Whatever that is, he still has yet to find a word in your language that would match up to whatever it is in his. So he motions for you to follow him down a stone path. You can see now, the more you move around, that once you get past the actual trash, the actual trash heap of the area, it's just cavernous tunnels, basically. It'd just be like going into any cave system underground. It's wet, kind of drippy. It's like a fairly traditional cave system. You kind of have to navigate some spaces here and there. If you guys, everybody would make a perception check, please.
Perception.
Excuse me.
33. 16.
I'm working on it.
19.
Okay.
Hirani, you in particular note that it's fairly clear. Most of you, for the most part, are just kind of on your toes, a little more concerned about what might be around another corner as opposed to what you're looking at in the immediate vicinity. Hirani, you do note to some degree that there's no way this is all natural. There's no way this is just, hey, well, I'll tell you what that was in a minute. There's no way that this is all natural. The way that this is cut out into the rock, it's been cut out. So somebody has been traveling underneath the planet's surface for quite some time. Sigurd, beyond that, you note too that there are more, especially since you're kind of tuned into the forest right now, there are more life sign sort of readings the further you follow this guy. And in fact, as you round an opposing corner a moment later, because he's kind of just twisting in and around these cages, not a straight shot, you come around the corner and come across another Starab as well as some other sort of creature in front of it. It's almost not even clear that it is a creature at first. It's kind of hard to see given the way that the light moves, since you guys have personal light sources. But it's like if water had a shape. It's the best way I can think to describe it. Like gelatin, in a way. It takes up about, it's a large size thing, so it takes up about the size of four people, about 20 feet all the way around, mostly spread flat along the ground, though it undulates in some points. It looks like it has little like pseudopods, and at the center of it is like a glowing kind of greenish colored mass, like spherical toward the center of it. It seems to be pulling itself along the ground, and it's pulling itself in your direction.
Creepy.
I'd like to step up, kind of get between the party and this, whatever this creature might be.
Gelatinous cube.
No.
That's actually probably the best way to describe it, yeah. It resembles that in a lot of ways, though. You can't see anything inside it right now. It's not like it has rusting away swords or anything.
Skulls.
Yeah, I'd just like to get, you know, between the party and it and kind of, you know, make a barrier and see what I can figure out about this creature.
Okay. What do you have in the way of knowledge skills?
I have no studied knowledge of any sort so far as I know. Let me check. Yep, I have no particular knowledge skills.
Okay, you don't have to roll. It's a creature.
It's a creature.
Mm-hmm.
It's a
living thing. That you can see.
Anybody else got a better edumacation back there?
I mean, I got galactic. Not that it gives me much. But
hey,
galactic lore.
I got two.
I got a 10 and everything.
Yeah, wait a minute. Harani, get up here.
Yeah, what can I do for you?
I love it. I love that Sigurd wants to be the barrier, then immediately upon realizing he doesn't know shit, is immediately going to call on everybody else.
Continue. I don't know why that was so funny to me. Yeah, what do you want?
Continue staying behind me, just kind of look out the side and go and just tell me what that.
Harani is going to peer around. What's his name?
Sigurd.
Sigurd. Yep. Around his shoulder, around his side, just kind of peek around like a ghost in the night. And she's going to say, I got a 31. No, she didn't. Why did I do a plus 20? The 21. It's a 21. Let's just say, fuck it, I'll roll it again. Why did I do a 20?
No, it's fine. You don't have to roll it again.
Okay.
This is not, no matter what level of studying you've undertaken, this is not a creature that you recognize. It looks like, I mean, you can pretty well figure out what it kind of does and how it works by studying it for a second, but this does not recall any immediate knowledge of, oh, that's what that is. It's this thing. And in doing so, it's when Hertwee now steps forward, kind of crouches down and reaches a hand out toward it. A pseudopod kind of reaches out and envelops it for a second and then drops back. And then it kind of just turns and goes the other way. And he looks back to you and he says, Grethka.
Oh.
I don't know what that means.
Harani nods and then shrugs at the rest of the group.
I'm assuming that is a Grethka.
Yeah. Harani and Kruskog are on the same page. We're starting to put two and two together.
He beckons you to come forward, and he gives like it's not really like a wave, but kind of a hail and well met to the other one as they pass. The other Starab looks very much like him. To a degree, they kind of look genderless. They look like they all just look like hairless Wookiees. And he looks in your direction, but there's not much of an expression to read. That said, it's very careful. There's definitely a level of unfamiliarity there, and it just kind of holds back as you pass further in. Eventually, Hertwee leads you into a big open area, what I would call like an underground, like a grotto, because there's some water flowing and such. The stalagmites that hang from the ceiling are now dripping kind of a greenish dew that provide light for the room. They have that luminescent moss on them as well. you can see that leading into there, you've come through one tunnel. There are seven other tunnels around the room that all lead in. Not exactly spaced evenly or anything, just sort of where they can manage to get into the room around the area. So a grand total of eight of those. And in the center of the room, there are eight, it takes a second to count, piles of rubble, just rocks and debris. They just look like random piles of rubble, basically, in the center of the room. As you reach the room, Hertwee calls out in something that is definitely not basic, and this time not even a word that really is something you can formulate. And a moment later, through one of the tunnels, a distinctly different but definitely Starab person enters through. This one is sort of like withered, kind of shriveled, like definitely older, you would assume, by their looks. Kind of hobbling along, making their way toward the center of the room. Now out of another tunnel, another one does so. And one by one, each of those tunnels has another Starab enter into the area. In fact, a moment later, one of them nudges past you. It's not clear how they got behind you, but nudges past you through the tunnel that you left and into the center of the room. Once they've all reached there, in fact, as this one passes, Hertwee turns to the one that passes through you and gives a very, very sterile nod, a very sort of fealty-inducing type thing. Once they all reach the center of the room, they make their way to those rubble piles, and they sit upon them like beanbags, like what you would probably assume are the most uncomfortable beanbags of all time. These people look quite comfortable in their piles of rubble. In fact, you get the idea that they're sort of throne-like, and they're in this kind of semi-circle, which fortunately you just happen to be facing toward the center of. Hertwee turns to you guys, puts up a hand, and then comes back to them, and stands before the group and begins speaking in their language again. Very difficult to understand. You've heard him say a few of these words here and there, but he's going fast enough that it's not really clear exactly what he's saying. You would assume he's just recounting what has happened up to this point. Excuse me. He takes his time. This takes a while. Like, the better part of 5 to 10 minutes, probably, he goes on explaining. What do you guys do in that time frame?
I'm just kind of observing the room.
Smile politely.
Yeah, Kruskog's going to be...
Homer Simpson, smiling politely.
Kruskog's going to be, like, doing the ping-pong thing across the room, like, as Hertwee talks, trying to follow who he's speaking to in general, kind of keeping eyes on everybody, but generally, like, Iris is trying to be as non-irreverent or as reverent as he can be in the situation, not being able to understand a single thing that's going on.
Yes.
Groz keeps picking at his fur and then looking at them and then picking at his fur again. And then he pulls a little bit out, and anybody who happens to be watching sees him, like, and he, like, starts trying to put it back on. No. He's very concerned about this possibility.
Our Wookiee friend needs some food.
He's concerned. Once this conversation seems to have come to an end, the whatever this council, if you want to call it, this little group, they look amongst each other while Hertwee comes, kind of takes a few steps back to you guys, points to one of them, it's the one who came through the tunnel that you guys were in, and says, Eldrahar. Explains nothing else. He just says, Eldrahar. That one now beckons you all forward.
As we walk forward, I would like to look at Hertwee and say, what does that mean?
Shit, it's the return of the communist commander.
Yes.
He points to her again and says, Eldrahar. Then he points at himself and says, Hertwee. Eldrahar.
Oh, okay. Sigurd.
Harani.
That one.
That's what we're going to do, Kruskog. Groz. Kruskog will just go, chip in for Groz there.
The Iris.
Once all the pleasantries are out of the way, this Eldrahar sort of acts like she's already aware of what's going on with you. in much the same sort of broken basic that Hertui speaks in, she says, "You are not part of us. Yet you have brought part of us back to us. You are not harmful to Praketh. You have helped Praketh. There is much illness here. We are beset with it. We hope you have come to this place to help Praketh further."
I feel like that's definitely something we could do. We do have other business here, but I feel like maybe these two things could be worked out together.
This is the part where Ray Stantz would step forward and say, as a duly appointed, you know where it's going.
The new one, though.
The new one.
Wildlife and fishery.
She does eventually say again, it's sort of broken basic, "Ask your questions."
We're currently on a mission looking for a friend of ours. An older female, possibly, you know, she would be known as a Jedi here amongst the Imperials. She's being held captive by them. Do you know anything about this?
At the word Imperial, she sort of tries to sound out Imperial, like in basic. And then kind of scrunches up her face and says, "All that is of Praketh belongs. That which is outside is not a part of us. But we do not know what you are talking about."
Okay, so... I feel like I'm doing all the talking.
I'm sorry. The tone there, I realized I really wanted to go, "You are a good friend, but we are talking." Anyway.
Well, let me ask you this: what brings this sickness to Praketh?
Ronnie's gonna step in and just tell her, "I call by points." See if that helps.
Sigurd grabs her by the face and just kind of pushes her to the side.
She says, "Praketh is sick," and she sort of sweeps her arm around the room as though looking at the stone. You can see. She says, "The Starab are all part of Praketh. We all suffer."
Okay, but what is causing the sickness?
As an interjection, Kruskal's going to gesture and just look at Sigurd. Between the Imperials and the mining, I feel we've probably figured out our two biggest culprits.
Well, yes, but I'm hoping that she would be able to...
Seemingly, she actually hears that, and you hear sort of like a low groan, and then she says, "There is a cancer on Praketh. We were created to protect against it, but it moves too fast. We can but slow its progress."
Can you take us to the... What's the best way to say this? Because basically it's just ground zero. Can you take us to the source of the cancer?
She looks at some of the others. There's some, like, very kind of hushed. They're hushed, even though it's very clear you have no idea what they're saying. Discussion, and she looks back and says, "We can discuss this in time."
Oh, we'll wait.
Sorry.
You're fine. I don't know if you caught that. She says, "We can discuss this in time."
Okay.
And exactly something we have a lot of.
I mean, if we can get a safe 24 hours rest and recuperate.
Like 8 hours, I think, is all we can ask for points.
Yeah, because 8 hours is all we need, isn't it, to recover everything?
8 hours is a long rest, yes.
Yeah, I mean, if we can get 8 hours rest to recover, recuperate, and give them time to be ready, then why not?
Yeah.
What's your best rock to sleep on? Just out of curiosity.
She actually sort of laughs a little bit to that and says, "You know, all here serve Praketh. We all have our function. The herders, like Herd Tui, cleared debris, The hewers work the passages and keep them open. The feeders tend to us all. All of us are important. And now, as are you.
I was already important.
Again, Sigurd pushes her away by her face. Well, my friends and I, you know, we could really use a rest, you know, a place to lie down and recover. It's been a long bit of time.
Ushkog will perp up at the other side of that sentence, though, and say, but we do, as you have mentioned, wish to assist
absolutely
and serve well in the means of Praka.
Okay. At this point in the conversation, another group of Starab have sort of moved in, kind of in and around those tunnels, and she gestures and says, with them, we will be with you in time.
Let's go.
We shall follow.
Okay. Pretty quickly, it becomes clear that the Starab are actually kind of eager to entertain visitors. This is not something they do very often, if at all. They're not used to anything non-hostile approaching them outside of their own race, basically. So yeah, you're given a pretty solid attempt to rest and recuperate. The food is something. there's definitely some sort of toasted fungus thing that is served.
All right.
Like it's been roasted over something. It's not even clear where the fire came from, frankly. Frankly, you're hoping it's been toasted. You don't have to eat. Everybody's got trail rations if you'd rather eat those, but you might want to make a show of it at least.
Yeah, Harani's definitely going to do that thing where she goes, yeah. And then she passes it to Groz. He'll eat anything.
Groz is actively eating all, and in fact, he's like now picking stuff off the walls and just sniffing, and occasionally one will come over and be like, no. You don't want that one. Eventually, you are given a chance to actually rest and shown to some rooms. Now, they're also not the most comfortable things in the world in the sense that it's basically just a room set away from everybody else. There are little rubble rock piles here and there, but yeah, it's pretty clear they don't entertain anything that's not comfortable with the stone. These are people basically of the stone. They are used to being a part of that. And in fact, the longer you guys spend time with them... Who's all got galactic lore?
Does mine count?
You got them all.
Okay.
You got them all. Yeah.
And then who else has galactic lore? Lindsay?
Everybody but me.
Okay. And I should have just said it this way. Everybody who's got galactic lore, make a check.
Twenty-five. 29.
I'm going to call my shot. It's going to be 12.
Cody, yours is 33.
Damn, 15.
Yeah, apparently I rolled twice on accident.
Yeah. Ronnie, this place is, you know, not that you're the debutante you may once have been, but this place is not comfortable.
No.
And this is frustrating. Since you've shown up here, nothing about this has been good. Everything has been frustrating. Your ship is being tended to by a guy you don't trust.
It's dirty.
You're underground. You went through a mine shaft / trash chute, and none of these people think you're very important. And that is just frustrating to the point that you don't remember anything about these people. And frankly, if you did, you probably wouldn't want to anyway.
I just won't have it, is what it is. Lindsay, what do you call that kind of character from your little book? It's also called the Steven.
And entitled Princess Bitch.
There you go.
His nickname in the group chat. however, that being said, Iris and Kruskog, the two of you do recognize a couple of things as this goes on. Iris, first, you realize that the Starab are not local to Praketh. It's clear that they have not been here forever, though it seems like they have to some degree. Whether you specifically have encountered them elsewhere or not, this is not the first time that they've been run across. They have encountered other races and such. Kruskog, with that information, you also, the further it goes, recall that while they have lived on the surface of some like rocky planets with stone buildings and monuments and stuff, their true presence is underground. Great catacombs that they go through and hew themselves. But this little bit of knowledge leaps out from the back of your mind of a race like this. And maybe they weren't even called the Starab then, but it's definitely the right people. No one knows where they came from at this point. The Starab themselves don't even seem to remember. So a home world is not really a thing you would deign for them. It just is wherever any group is. There's nowhere for them to go back to because they don't really know where they came from in the first place. That information being disseminated through the group, who's got social sciences or life sciences in terms of knowledge?
Probably just Hirani.
That'd be Hirani. Yes, the only knowledge I have is galactic lore.
Okay. I need you, once that information is shared with you, even though you're at this point, you're like, this is of no consequence. Who cares? None of this is relevant to me.
That is true.
But you are the educated one, so I need both a knowledge of social sciences and a life sciences check.
All right, we'll do social sciences first.
Okay. Anybody who wants to aid, for the record, you can aid another on this. Well, you can do that first. Basically, what that is, you're just going to roll any knowledge checks that you do have, and if you hit over a certain DC, you can add some bonuses to her checks.
I'll go ahead and throw one.
Okay. Yeah, one per thing, basically.
Yep, not much. 21.
And that's enough to give a bonus, though. Okay. All right, Hirani?
I got a 22.
Okay. So, plus a bonus noted. And then the other one?
Help on the other one.
Nat 20.
She doesn't need the help.
Yeah.
No, you still want to roll that.
Okay.
These are skill checks.
Wow. So
there
30.
Are no guarantees of skill checks.
Well, I'm no help.
31.
17.
It's enough that after basically once they kind of leave you guys to your own devices and before you completely crash, the other two Hirani are like, hey, look, we need your help here. We need you to try to remember some things. So they pretty much got Graz just propping you up. Like, do the thing. Remember the stuff.
It's weekend at Hirani's.
The longer it goes, the more that eventually you start to recall a lot of the same stuff that Kruskog did. Here's pretty much what you know about what this group likely is and how they operate. They are the type of race, and they're not the only ones, but one in particular, that consider the world that they're on to be a living entity. They believe that they are not just on a living planet, but that they are the planet's antibodies, like microorganisms that are symbiotically living with the world of rock, and they're responsible for caring for it. That extends to everything from clearing out tunnel blockages, well, that's just to improve its circulation of air and water, keeping all the erosion uniform, and respecting all the surface environment. So this illness they're talking about is not only just clearly the Empire, but the way the Empire is specifically treating the planet. If they had just come along and set up shop, whatever, but the moment they started drilling holes into it, that's when it became a massive problem. Their society, and this you also get the more you observe them, the more it reminds you of something, breaks down into about 8 different sectors, and they're all basically imagined as anatomical systems. Like, Herdtui is a part of the herders, as was mentioned earlier. Well, they're there to steer these Greethka in the right tunnels to eat up, you know, the trash that is the foreign material that's causing problems. Hewers are there to keep the tunnels safe and clear, so they're the ones that make the tunnels themselves. The feeders are the ones who get the lichen together to help sustain them and all. They have sort of a little system, and everybody kind of works together. It's like a humanoid ant colony in a lot of ways.
Okay.
But yeah, that's more or less what you know about them. Herdtui, by the way, also, before anybody fully beds down, kind of further explains the Greethka as best he can in basic. He's still having trouble with the words, but it comes down to these are creatures that are of the planet. They believe them to be part of that same system. The herders are meant to sort of direct them in the right direction and eating things that need to be gotten rid of. If they're left to their own devices, they will gorge, or they will eat things that they're not meant to eat, and then they become out of control and difficult to get back under. You know, you saw the one envelop his hand. It didn't try to eat him. That was a greeting. an out of control one might be more liable to actually try and envelop him and take him, you know, organic matter. And that's where he his face sort of drops, and he makes mention that, you know, he's been hiding something this whole time.
No. That
he didn't. Stuff. He didn't come to the surface just because he was curious. He ended up on the surface because he was trying to find his Grithka.
Oh, no.
Because it got away from him. And he still doesn't know where it is, but he hasn't told anybody in the main circuit there because he knows what'll happen if he does. So he's hoping that you guys will be able to help him solve that issue at some point, but he knew once you first exited the drains it was in your best interest to first get here and rest. I mean, he knows, you know, as well as you guys do, how much everyone was beaten up, pretty much. So.
All right.
He's asking for your help at this point.
Yeah, another search and reconnaissance mission. Hooray! Recovery!
Well, when a friend asks for help, you help.
Especially, yeah, especially when that friend's other entity can consume things. I feel like we gotta get a hold of that.
This is the Blob. I've seen this movie. Yeah. Yeah, I've seen it.
Outer space.
He doesn't make you like give an answer in the moment. He's not saying, "Hey, we have to go right now." He says, "Rest, relax." You can tell that it feels good to get that off of his chest. And he says, "We'll discuss this later." And so he leaves you to your own devices. You're underground, so it is not clear what time of day it is or anything like that, but it has been a long day for you, put it that way. You know it's been quite some time, because again, you guys were trying to relax in the evening when all this happened with him, so. Yeah. What do you want to do?
Sleep.
Find me a corner and go to sleep.
Yes. Graz is my pillow.
Yes, I have some.
Yeah, that works. Graz is kind of like, I mean, the boy could fall asleep anywhere, and indeed he does. Not so much on the rock bed, like up against it. So with him sort of stretched out, anybody that lays up against him is just like, that's a pillow. Yeah. That's fine.
It's one of those fuzzy pillows that Lindsay likes so much.
The good news is, again, you are completely safe. There's no possibility for attack or anything. You're within a colony that has been defending itself for some time. So rest comes easy. Everyone's force points are reset, so you're all good there. Should be, what, four for Iris and Harani, and then five for Sigurd and Doug.
Yes.
Gotcha.
And we
heal our damage too, right?
Yeah, as long as nobody is anybody down to step on the condition track?
No.
Okay, then yeah, you should be good. You should heal up. Yeah. We don't have any persistent conditions to worry about at the moment.
Got it.
Okay. Noted. The next day comes about. Hurtwee comes around and rouses you all and presents you with yet another meal. Another fungal meal. It's, this one's wet. I don't know why. Neither does he.
Oh, no.
That means it's fresh. Oh. That just means it's fresh.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, gosh. Off the...
He's already got a mouthful.
It's wiggly.
It looks like he's chewing on a sponge. He's just gnashing away at it.
I'm going to play the pretend game this time and eat one of my ration packs.
As long as you keep track of those, you're welcome to do so. For the record, the longer you've been around these people, the more that you get the idea that they, short of being directly attacked, they don't really concern themselves with, social cues and that sort of thing. They're not like offended by words. They may not even really get what some kind of, you know, slang terms like that would mean. That stuff just doesn't seem to bother them. They're far more concerned with the way things are, or again, if they're being physically attacked. So the more this goes on, the clearer it becomes that they don't care if you do or don't eat their food. If you don't like it, it's not a big deal to them.
They're very chill.
Yeah, they just don't have anything else to offer is the only thing.
Right.
Kippies.
Hurtwee mentions that another of the elders would like to speak with you all. This is Elder Nall, who was apparently the youngest of them, he makes mention. But other than that, he says he has something that he would like to show you. He has taken an interest in you, and he would like to speak with you, if that's okay.
It has to be done right now, yeah.
Okay. So he'll lead you down another set of these, you know, hewn tunnels. Along the way, Hurtwee mentions that Elder Nall is of the Eight, the one who is responsible for, the best way he could describe it is like logistics, keeping tabs on where people need to go, the tunnelers need to go, what the lichen harvesters are doing, and basically just the big picture. You know, the surface and the underworld. He's also meant to keep track of what's happening above them in case it's going to affect them. As he brings you in to meet him and the little basic pleasantries are exchanged, that's kind of when that comes about. And so Elder Nall pulls away this sort of dusty sheet-like thing and reveals that there is a big slab underneath it that's painted with these kind of phosphorescent hues. It looks like someone has kind of dipped their fingers in some of the juices produced by those lichen and painted on them by hand. This is what they call a petrogram. He says it is the world flesh set in stone. It's a map. It's very clearly to you guys a map of the way that they seem to understand the world. Elder Nall says to you specifically, I thought this might be beneficial to you in whatever it is you are seeking. And so he kind of gestures to it and leaves it to you to go and examine it if you like.
Yeah, let's check that out.
Yeah.
Yes.
He's also open to questions, basically, if you have any.
Well, babe, I want to ask him if, you know, on this map, on this... I'm just gonna call it a map. On this map, you know, what location is the source of the sickness? Like, where are these people doing the most damage at?
Give us the map, Scott.
So he says to you that basically human structures or your structures are all kind of alike to them, which is a little ironic because of course underground tunnels all kind of look the same to you, you know. But he does know what a few things... He points out, like, a few places, and... who has... Okay, knowledge skills other than Harani. It's galactic lore, and what else do you guys have?
Tactics is the other one I have.
Tactics, okay. Then, Harani, you make a knowledge check, because this would fall under one of those non-related things to that. Trying to basically read a map that you've never read.
19, but I... probably want to use a force point for this.
Okay. Go right ahead. Actually, while you guys are reading all that, talk amongst yourselves, and I will be right back.
22, by the way.
You get 3, bro.
Yeah.
Oh, you get 3? So.
Yeah. Doesn't matter.
22.
2 1s. That's always good. That's a good sign.
The dice, they are not friendly to you.
My practice rolls were garbage.
Come, join the Kruskog system. It has many benefits.
No, it doesn't.
Name one benefit.
Cry.
Low expectations.
Cry enough.
Sadness, low expectations, crying, boundless use of force points. Disappointment to you and all your new friends.
But he's only the second most disappointed Jedi in history behind Rey. I said it. I went there.
Are you going to say like Mara or something since you're going to go there?
No. No.
Did you say Mara Jade?
I did say Mara Jade.
You leave Mara Jade out of this, yeah.
Okay. What greatness did Mara Jade bring to the new Jedi Order?
Banged Luke Skywalker.
She did.
Made some little Lukes.
Made some little Anakins too.
Made some little house phones.
No, that was Leia and Han that made the little Anakins.
I remember how disappointed I was when I read the original like storylines of the expanded universe where Leia and Han had three children, and it was a good story. It was a pair of twins, and then Anakin was the third one. And there was this great, great story, and it ended with Chewbacca dying because of Anakin, and it was this struggle and darkness and all that. And then they made a movie, and instead of having, I think one was named Jason Anakin, and I don't remember what the other one's name was.
It was a girl, wasn't it?
It was a girl.
I'm pretty sure that was a girl.
I think it was Jaina.
Jaina, yeah.
But then in the movie, it was just Ben. Ben Solo, named after a guy neither of them really knew. Congrats.
You know what I always took issue with? He was Ben Solo, and then he changed his name to Kylo Ren. He literally changed, he switched his names and changed one letter in each one. Ren Kylo.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
Oh, two letters in one.
Kylo Ren is one of the most badass names in Star Wars, though. That's just a cool name. Ren. And the Knights of Ren, of which Kylo decimated in their brief fight scene after all that build up. Oh, I hate the new trilogy.
I mean, he was the leader of the Knights of Ren for a reason.
I like Kylo from the new trilogy, and I like Poe, and I liked Finn sometimes. That was it.
They left that whole, I have something I need to tell you. And then tell you after the movie comes out, oh yeah, he was going to tell her that he could, you know, he's connected to the Force.
But they dropped it.
Why the fuck didn't they say that in the movie?
Because they dropped it.
I know. No, did they? They left that part in the movie where, hey, I have something I need to tell you.
Yeah, but they never followed up on it.
I know.
Just like they had to add in two girlfriends in the third movie so no one thought Poe and Finn were gay anymore. How sad is that? But then they also threw in the first gay kiss in Star Wars as a sorry, which then got it banned in some countries. Ah, the world is a masterful tapestry.
You told us to talk between ourselves.
I was sort of hoping it'd be about the game. Anyway, so I'm back. We got 22.
Yeah, 22. Yeah, the ass fire.
Okay. Okay, hang on. You were doing that, and oh my God, Tanner, Sigurd, you were asking what now? What was the question?
Oh, just you know, if they could show us on the map where the show us where it hurts.
Okay. Between the two of you, that being the case, and Harani trying to kind of translate what, like, roughly they've put up there, again, human structures all pretty much look alike to them. Harani, after studying this thing for a little bit, you can pretty well figure out where they mean the Praxity Plateau to be, which is, of course, where, you know, pretty much the first human interaction was happening there. The Magador Range, you know where that is. Now, mostly it's pretty clear that they know it from below, but they have seen enough above that they can kind of figure out what it's meant to look like altogether. You do know that the Citadel Inquisitorius, you guys know, is in the Magador Range. You just don't necessarily know where. It doesn't appear to be clear to them either, because they don't have it specifically noted in there. But for the most part, you kind of get the basic lay of the land in terms of what it's meant to look like to them. So I can actually give you some of that right now. I'll just drop this in the Discord so you can take a look rather than making a whole map out of it.
Well, drop us like it's hot.
There you go. Okay. Well, that's pretty much what they know of the surrounding area.
And like you said, we know that the Inquisitors are somewhere in the Magador Range. We just don't know where.
In terms of where you are, to the best of your knowledge, you would assume that it is somewhere between the Work Zone and the Geddes Mine, because you have not run into another mine, and you knew about the Geddes Mine. That was the place that you were going to go try to apply and work. So you are probably somewhere between those two, which means it's a pretty good distance to almost anywhere else.
Anyway, we can, let me think here. You know, point to the Magador range and say, hey, you know, we need to get here.
Okay. Give me just a second here. So, to that end, as that's mentioned, Eldernoth sort of puts his head down and lets out kind of a sigh. And he says, the closest approach to what you mean is what you call the Geddes cave system. And he points to that area where the Geddes mine would be, basically. He says, this is perhaps a day away. But then he kind of looks away and comes back through the conversation and says, Sister Elderhar spoke true. A cancer has come to our planet. On the flesh as with those who took our herder son, and in the flesh as well. What you see here is the record of a desperate act, but an act of love to save Praketh. He starts pacing around as he says, when the parasites first arrived, we did not know what they were. We hoped they were like us, the Starab, the Greethka, all of us who are part of the whole. But when they took to burrowing, we found they were of another, foreign bodies, with no respect and a danger to the system. None alive forgets when their sound makers and light makers entered our world. Hundreds of Starab were at work in what you call these Geddes caves, and he points there again. Tending Praketh as is our purpose. The parasites took our cousins and turned them against that purpose, forced them to join in ravaging the planet's hide. They became part of the cancer, and we had no choice but to amputate.
Does that mean you had to terminate your brethren?
No, we are not warriors. He points to where that part of the system was cut off, and he draws his finger through the bioluminescent fluid that's there to create a separation.
So there's no way from underground to get there.
At this, the closest thing to like a kind of a wry smile that you've seen on any of these guys comes up, and he says, oh, there is always a way, but not one which we will undertake.
Understood.
So our quickest option to get here is above ground.
To that, he just sort of shrugs his shoulders, shakes his head. You know more of the surface world than we do.
Not quite, but your confidence is appreciated.
He appreciates that about you. Okay, how were they cut off? Was like, did you collapse a tunnel?
He gives you that much. They collapse the tunnel.
I like to think that he really did just answer with, yeah.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Sure. Definitely.
Yeah.
All right.
He also sort of flowerily explains, you know, that this is a common, or well, flower's not the right way. That suggested it's an important, in their way of describing themselves as kind of these caretakers and these kind of antibodies for this living organism of the planet. Basically, he explains that this is not the first time, nor is it the last, that they will have to do something like that. You know, when something is damaged beyond the point of repair, you amputate, you cut it loose. In this case, he makes it clear that this is among the more painful of those, because sometimes it's just this cave system is too dangerous, or, you know, this one has worn out its usefulness and it's unsafe. This time around, it was our own people were taken from us by a foreign invading, you know, group. And turned against us. They truly believe that the miners that were taken from them, their people, that are now being used to, you know, ravage the planet, have been turned against them, that they are evil. And so they made it so they couldn't get back to them.
Okay, I'm going to kind of look to my team here. And what if we could get one of these creatures that they herd to eat a path through here for us? God, I don't believe going above ground is our safest bet, but also at the same time, I don't know what's on the other side of this blown tunnel.
I'm going to save you some trouble for just a second real quick. The Grithka don't eat stone.
Oh, okay, cool.
They eat other debris.
Yeah.
All right, things that are not of the planet. Okay, now, that's not to say that there's not a way through. I mean, again, these guys are miners. That's what they do. They hew the stone. I mean, they have a whole... One of the eight sections is a group that hews the stone. But the Grithka can't do it. They eat other things.
Matter. Okay, so... But he's already said that they're not willing to do that to, you know, dig this tunnel back out. Unless he meant something else. So, yeah, I'm going to pose that question. You know, would your miners be willing to help us, you know, at least make some kind of path through this collapsed tunnel so we can get through?
He fairly quickly shakes his head and suggests, no, it's impossible. It's not to be done. Hurtui, however, is kind of like looking at you guys, doing his best to give kind of an imploring eye look of, that's not the worst idea, without saying it.
Okay. Well, if you don't mind, we're going to, you know, get together and we're going to, you know, weigh our options and figure out what we want to do here.
As you wish.
So, yeah, I want to pull everybody to the side and go to Hurtui and, okay, how do we go about doing this? Because I think this is our safest bet to get through.
Are you asking Hurtui specifically?
Yes.
Okay.
Because I
misunderstood that, too. I thought you were asking the group. That's why I was waiting.
I'm asking Hurtui because I seen the look that he gave.
I mean, even he is pretty clearly nervous about this idea. But he says, you know, if you could, if what you seek is to get into those mountains, this is the best way. But it's going to take some convincing. If you could reunite the tribes, that could work. But he says, you do have to understand, I am more trusting of you because I've known you for some time now. If you think that's possible, I believe you. I believe you could do it. It's going to take some real convincing on the part of these people to make that the case. Because the Starev in general believe that when one turns against another, there is no redemption.
Well, how would we
again,
convince
they
them?
They seem to fully believe that is the case.
Harana, we need to talk.
Yeah.
As you are the most persuasive person in the group.
Mm-hmm. Go on.
I need you to put aside your sour ways currently and help us convince these tribes to get back together. You know, letting them know that we're here. We're here to help. We're here to get rid of this cancer. That we believe their brothers aren't truly lost. That something happened that made them do this. And that they deserve redemption.
I can try to do that, but on a personal level... like outside of the game, I'm too tired to come up with a grand speech, so I can give you the bullet points and then roll my persuasion.
You said what I said.
Because of what you guys, and especially Harati, because of what you have sort of gleaned from being around these people and from what you remember from studies and such of this type of society, it occurs to you that it would be a good idea to approach this from an almost medical standpoint, from an anatomical standpoint, that these people consider themselves to be these kind of antibodies of the planet, these microorganisms that are there to take, they're only there, their only existence is there to take care of the planet. If you approach the elders from that perspective in talking about the ones who have left them, and that might be a better way of convincing them that, hey, these people can actually be redeemed or saved or however you want to put it.
I want to do that.
Okay.
I'm very boring and I'm sorry tonight, but I want to do that.
Okay. So, I mean, it takes a little bit to get the groups together, but Hurtui asks that they come back together. They do. They all make their way down the little tunnels and back to the main area. Hurtui leads you back there. Elder Har. The woman that you spoke to yesterday, who kind of seems to be in the main sort of lead of talking to everybody, says that she understands that you have a request and would like to hear you out.
Okay. And I do want to give that speech about the other people and saving basically all the things you just said, saving them and the antibodies and all that. I am so sorry. I'm very tired. You get what I'm saying.
You don't have to do it. I mean, anybody else can do it if they want to.
Yeah, but I am the most persuasive.
I'll let you make the roll. Oh, that's fine. You can make the roll.
I'll be hype man. I'll hype man you, Tanner. This is all you tonight, Tanner. This is your show. Next week's my show.
Go find your fandom mask. You'll be slow down from the St. Lunatics because God knows he didn't rap anything.
So we believe that your brother may not be lost. We believe that whatever this cancer-causing thing on this planet might have affected them. We think we can redeem them. We think we can help them. And we think we can help you get rid of this cancer to cure it. But we need your assistance. We need the assistance of everyone.
Yeah.
Elderhart says, and what is it that you request of us exactly?
The tunnels that you collapsed to cut off your lost ones. We need through there. We need through there to get to the mountains. This is the safest route for us to get there and end this and cure this cancer.
There's definitely a sort of, hushed murmur among them about, the idea of cutting through those tunnels again and what happened last time. And you catch a few little, again, broken basic things there.
I like hearing those murmurs. I want to remind them, like, not only are we here to save your, like, going to try to save your planet by getting rid of this. Those loved ones, the family and the people that you've lost because of this, that you think have, no chance of redemption. We believe they have a chance of redemption. We believe that whatever is causing this planet to die like this caused them to turn, that maybe they can be cured. And this is the way.
Okay. Ronnie, make the roll. Perception check.
Perception or persuasion?
Persuasion. Okay. Persuasion.
Well, it says like perception check. I can do those. I'm good at those.
Right. Wait, actually, hold on. No, it's deception. Damn it. I can reroll deception, not persuasion. Ain't that a bitch? You got 20 die, and you got a plus 23, and then of the 20 die, you roll a 5. Isn't that...
Well, here's the good news. That combined with the specific terminology of, this the medical kind of terminology seems to be enough that after a little bit of conversation, Elderhart comes back and says, "We're placing an awful lot of faith in you. You understand we will expect results."
That's what we do.
We're in the private sector now. They expect results.
We are results.
With that in mind, a few people are sent off in different directions. Eventually, one comes back with about 20 Starib. Very clearly sort of the able-bodied younger ones of them with some basic stone tools. It's made clear to you guys that these guys are meant to then be your escorts. They will take you to the westernmost terminus, where the engineered cave-in they had, that they engineered, prevents access to anything further than that. That's going to put you directly underneath the Geddes mine. But if they clear this path for you, they expect you to then, again, provide results. Bring back their people to them.
Well, we'll try.
And they will allow you to go further, basically.
Oh, so we've got to rescue their people and then...
Oh, yeah, they're only going to cut out enough that's going to benefit them initially. If you can prove that that's a good idea in the first place, then they'll continue the rest of the process so that you can go further underground.
Okay.
Are you guys sure about this?
Nope.
Would you rather be walking around the top of the planet?
I can't answer that right now, but I'm going to trust you.
Okay. So the group gets together. It's still pretty early in the day when all this is going on. These 20 Stereb come along with you, about 20 of them or so. It's about a day's walk. I mean, it's not a forced march, but at a regular pace and stopping occasionally to you know, rest for a second, it takes what you would assume is about a day's walk. You know, about the time that if you were above ground, the sun would be going down. Once they reach this engineered cave-in, these guys, they don't even ask questions. They just immediately go to work. And they work faster than you might even imagine anyone could with these sort of primitive tools. But pretty quickly, within a couple of hours, they've got a human-sized, you know, base, well, an average-sized space Kraus can get through just fine, for you to head through the blockage. One of them, however, does step aside and pulls Iris aside for whatever reason and makes mention to her that there is an understanding that they will not be following you into the unknown. They will only come along after you have been told, or after they have been told by you that the further areas are secured, that once again, they're workers, not warriors. And they're not here to fight. Okay.
I wouldn't expect them to fight.
All right.
We're hoping not to fight.
Oh, I'm still going in with my gun in my hand, so.
Miss Darkside point over there.
Oh, I have one. So says dangerous.
Guy, yeah, says the guy who entirely nuked a character and kicked him over the cliff.
I don't know what the hell you're talking about. That was my brother.
Okay, the passage is open. You guys can move through whenever you like and however you like.
Can we see anything or is it pitch black? Do we have a tool? Did they give
it's
us any? Did they give us any tools like lanterns or anything, you know, equivalent?
Nope. It doesn't look like they even use that kind of thing to work on their own, like themselves. Normally, they've got some level.
They're probably
low light to dark vision.
Yeah.
All right. So Sigurd, I'd say maybe hold off on just, you know, whipping the lightsabers out immediately because you want to scare whatever's in this cave.
Glow rod.
Yeah.
Do we have any glow rods?
I don't know, do you?
I think
I have a fusion lantern still.
I think I have some glow rods from that one mission still left over.
I got a Stokely spray stick.
Yeah, I've got at least one glow rod right now.
Graz has low light vision.
He doesn't.
Damn it.
He does not.
Damn it.
No, he does not.
Wookiees come from Kashyyyk, man. It's like verdant green forest.
It's so bright. It's so bright there.
He's got highlight vision. Like he can't even. He doesn't even do well in the nighttime.
He's got to wear shades. Big Wookiee shades.
So you guys want to hold these things, or you want to like toss it through? What do you want to do here?
I'm gonna take mine and toss it in.
Okay. Through there, you can see that there is basically like a big pile of collapsed rubble. Getting close enough to do that, Sigurd, you can tell that there is kind of like a rush of air coming through this opening that they've made, and it is surprisingly like foul. Where you came from was kind of musty because it's underground, but there was still some fresh air, you have to assume, probably due to some of the moss kind of processing some of that stuff. But this is very much a human, or at least a body-like stench coming from up above. In fact, you can now see beyond that light, there does seem to be like sort of another light source off in the distance, but whatever is living up there must not be living much of a life because it is funky.
I'm hoping we're not going to find a bunch of these creatures dead.
Probably.
I mean, weren't they buried in a cave by their brothers? They're probably dead.
There would have been access from another area, I'm sure. Especially if there's any kind of fresh air coming through.
All they did was cut them off. They didn't say they took it down while they were there.
Tanner, can you use Sigurd's force detect corpse ability?
Shit. I can use the
yeah?
Yeah, surrounding thing. Make sure there's no enemies at least. Yeah, the sense surrounding.
For the record, sense surrounding doesn't really work like that. Sense surrounding is basically meant to be used in combat, so you can prevent concealment when somebody's like trying to hide from you in combat. Yeah. There is another application of use the force that does
some stuff like that. I think. Yeah, sense force lets you, like, sense force-related things. But you can't just, it's not just a, it's not echolocation. Like, here's all the people.
I gotcha. Okay, well, then I'll just move up to the glow route that I threw in and pick it up and continue on.
And we'll be behind him.
Closely behind me.
Fairly. I have my blaster 6 feet.
On, just in case.
Yeah, six lightsaber's in my hand.
Are you like wanting to stealth up here? Is that the goal?
No.
Okay.
Wait a minute. Maybe. What is my
stealth? No, that decision's made now. We're past that. I gave you the opportunity.
My stealth is terrible, so it's okay.
Man, really? Yeah. Okay, here we go.
Now, I didn't answer there, Hunter. Can I stealth behind him? No, it's fine. I don't want to do that. It's fine.
The problem with this is there was no good way to address this. I have to take it based on the way you guys said it. You're moving in, and he's moving along behind you. You guys are moving along behind him. Okay. Yeah, so
Kruskog is going to, at some point of peace, go, I'm right in the middle of something, Sigurd.
I can't pull too many punches at a certain point.
Yep.
Oh, God, this completely changes what I was going to do.
Go back to what you were going to do.
No, he said he likes it. Will we surprise him?
Yeah, he does, apparently.
Might not be good normally, for us, but...
Normally, when in the past, when I've been asked it, are you wanting to sneak? No, because if I sneak, then I'm going to fail, and it's just bad.
Well, it's going to be bad anyway. Don't worry.
So, you guys make your way up through this collapsed tunnel. It's a little bit of an upward climb, but you're climbing along. You can hear a little bit of sound up above you to a certain degree. As you exit that sort of tunneled area, as you make your way up to that point, you enter an octagonal room that is fairly small, probably 25, 30 feet all the way around, that has some just haphazard beds laid around. There are frames to a certain degree, so they're up off the ground, but that's about it. A quick scan of the room shows you that there are nothing but Starab in this room. They're not dead, but they're certainly worse for the wear. These people are gaunt. Most of them are injured to some degree. You can see that they have injuries all, you know, like scarring and that sort of thing all on them. And upon your entrance, all coming through simultaneously, one of them who is knelt down at the side of a bed and seems to be wrapping like some sort of a bandaging around one of the other's arms, looks up at you and screams. And that's where we're going to cut it off for tonight.
Shit, that's some invasion of the, what was it called? Invasion of the pod people? Body snatchers, yeah.
Yep. That's Dallas. No, that's like a pointing, no, this is very much a, where the fuck did you people come from? And who are you?
Oh, well, maybe that's not so bad.
No, that's absolutely worse. That's absolutely worse.
And that's where we're going to cut it off for tonight.
Oh, man.
So,
thanks, Tanner.
Guys, as always,
thank you, Tanner, kids.
Thank you for joining us for tonight's episode. We will be back. I believe we'll be back this following Tuesday, right? I think we're good for this coming Tuesday, as I recall.
Maybe. It really depends on my hotel.
That is the hope. So fingers crossed we'll have a new episode for you actually in just a few days. Until then, Shannon, tell them what they need to know about where to hear us and all that good stuff.
Well, we posted a new episode of After Dark yesterday. We're a day behind on the episodes because of some technical issues we had on the well-received and very popular first episode of Arguably Entertaining, where we pit Spider-Man against the Batman in a fight for who's the better superhero. No spoilers. You got to listen to it to find out who won. But it was a lot of fun and a lot of good feedback on that. We're very proud of this new show. Hunter's idea based on, I think, some random thing I said during the death of Podzilla 1985. I said that we were arguably entertaining.
It was you or Kaz, and I don't remember which one it was. You, the three of us were talking, and one of the two of you said the phrase arguably entertaining, and I remember in the moment going, that's the show. That's what we're going to do. We're going to do. And at the moment, it wasn't even this show. I just remember going, "That's I have to commit that to memory. I got to use that somewhere."
It was horse time. It was one of the, when we were talking about killing off Podzilla 1985, and we were discussing the end, and I'm pretty sure it was me that I said, you know, we were arguably entertaining at least. And yeah, I remember you, I saw the light bulb go off over your head and you were like, oh,
that's a thing.
And, you know, Hunter, he talked about it and talked about it, about wanting to do it. We finally pulled the trigger this week for the new year of 2022 of PZ85. And yeah, it was very well done, very well received, but a lot of technical errors. So it took me an extra day to get it all.
Hopefully not be the case next time.
No, we'll get it fixed up, but I pieced it together. That episode's up. Last night we had a new episode of After Dark. Dalton joined us for the first time in a while. We talked about movies, stories that we wanted to see turned into movies. And we talked a little bit about January 6th. We'll talk more about that. Actually, tomorrow, I forgot we were recording tonight because I asked Kaz if he would record a new episode of my podcast, No Turning Back, with me, and to talk about the anniversary of January 6th. And then I saw the message about us recording tonight and I completely forgot about it. So we pushed that back to tomorrow. So tomorrow, you know, we've got PZ85 plays tonight. We've got a No Turning Back tomorrow. Me and Kaz talking about the January 6th anniversary. And then we'll be back on Tuesday with an all new PZ85 play. So it's going to be a busy week. And you can catch all of that on Podzilla1985.com. You can also find us on Facebook.com/Podzilla1985, where you can catch up with the news, and we post new shows and all that good stuff. And of course, if you have Spotify, iTunes, anything like that, you can listen to us on your favorite platform. So exciting times around here. I apologize for being so tired tonight. I am excited about all this, I promise.
And don't, in addition to that, don't forget there is another Arguable Entertaining coming your way this next Wednesday as well, where we pit, in our second episode, the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers against the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. We still have not found out exactly who's going to be on what side, for that matter, in this.
So,
well, I can tell you, somebody wants to be a martyr on one of those sides. So
yeah. So Tanner jumped in head first and said Hezbollah. Meanwhile, me and everybody else, it's like that SNL skit of... What's their names? Hunter, help me out.
Dylan McDermott or Dermot Mulroney?
Yeah, it's us behind the podiums going, nope, nope, mm-mm, nope. We will never know this.
I think it was Asa. Asa, who right out of the gate said that he was going to be on the side of the Turtles and wanted to make anyone who was on the Power Ranger side cry.
He said he's a fan of both, but his goal is to make whoever's on the Power Ranger side cry. Here's my thing.
Yeah, I'm out of this
I'm not even studying for this one. I don't need to.
Oh, you arrogant fool.
This is so bold, especially considering, I mean, I am desperately trying to be impartial, but again, I am treating this like Who's Line, and I have said it from the get-go. I don't give a shit about Power Rangers. I barely cared about Power Rangers. I just thought it'd be a good matchup.
Tanner,
so. I believe that you're going to be fair and impartial here as best as you can.
I believe that you believe that.
Tanner,
that's what I believe.
Tanner, don't get arrogant and think you don't have to bring evidence to prove a point that should easily be made, because obviously, hold on. It's my turn to speak, counselor.
I'm trocking.
Lest ye forget that I took a very easy victory for Batman and I lost it, spoiler alert. So don't think that just because you know the source material and you're passionate about it means that you're going to win the case. You better do some research.
Well, maybe so. All right. Let's tip the hand a little bit. I was so happy to think, you know what? It's a challenge. I would like to join the side of the Power Rangers. But no, homeboy's real bold. I'm going to let you die on that fucking sword. Have fun.
And is it really that? Is it really?
I'm not alone, though.
Is the
power. Oh, Josh, fuck, you aren't.
In what universe do a group of mutated, you know, reptiles stand up against an intergalactic force of space ninjas? No, fuck that, son. Anyway. That's this Wednesday.
The show hasn't even happened. This is the best trailer I could possibly have gotten for this. All right, that's it. We're cutting it off here. Guys, thanks for joining us again. We're back on Tuesday with a new episode. We'll find out what happens in the continuing adventures of Dawn of Defiance, Episode 9, The Sword of the Empire. But until then, for Shannon, for Lindsay, for Tanner, and for Cody, I am your Game Master, Double H. May the Force be with you, and we'll see you then. Later.